or disciplinarian, also shielded more insecurity than he would have cared to admit. Now his career was on the line. He knew exactly how important this mission was. His future would ride on the decisions he was about to make. "Can you localize with one ping?" The sonar chief considered this for a second. "Not enough for a shooting solution, but it'll give us something." "One ping. Do it." "Aye." Laval worked on his board briefly, triggering the active elements. The VK Konovalov. Tupolev winced. He had acted too soon. He should have waited until they were past. But then, if he had waited that long, he would have had to move, and now he had all three of them hovering nearby, almost still. The four submarines were moving only fast enough for depth control. The Russian Alpha was pointed southeast, and all four were arrayed in a roughly trapezoidal fashion, open end seaward. The Pogi and the Dallas were to the north of the Konovalov. The Red October was southeast of her. The Red October. "Somebody just pinged her," Jones said quietly. "Bearing is roughly northwest, but she isn't making enough noise for us to read her. Sir, if I had to make a bet, I'd say she was pretty close."
"How do you know that?" Mancuso asked.
"I heard the pulse direct. Just one ping to get a range. I think. It was from a BQQ-5. Then we heard the echo off the target. The math works out a couple of different ways, but smart money is he's between us and our guys, and a little west. I know it's shaky, sir, but it's the best we got."
"Range 10 kilometers, perhaps less," Bugayev commented.
"That's kind of shaky, too, but it's as good a starting place as any. Not a whole lot of data, sorry, skipper. Best we can do," Jones said.
Mancuso nodded and returned to control.
"What gives?" Ryan asked. The plane controls were pushed all the way forward to maintain depth. He had not grasped the significance of what was going on.
"There's a hostile submarine out there."
"What information do we have?" Ramius asked.
"Not much. There's a contact northwest, range unknown, but probably not very clear. I know for sure it's not one of ours. Norfolk said this area was cleared. That leaves one possibility. We drift?"
"We drift,"
Ramius echoed, lifting the phone. He spoke a few orders. The October's engines were providing the power to move the submarine at a fraction over 2 knots, barely enough to maintain steerage way and not enough to maintain depth. With her slight positive buoyancy, the October was drifting upward a few feet per minute, despite the plane setting.
The Dallas.
"Let's move back south. I don't like the idea of having that Alpha closer to our friend than we are. Come right to 185 2/3, Chambers said finally.
"Aye, aye," Goodman said.
"Helm right, 15 degrees rudder. Come to new course 185, all ahead 2/3.
"Right 15 degrees, rudder aye,"
the helmsman turned the wheel.
"Sir, my rudder is right 15 degrees, coming to new course 185.
The Dallas's four torpedo tubes were loaded with 3 Mark 48s and a decoy, an expensive MOSS, Mobile Submarine Simulator. One of her torpedoes was targeted on the Alpha, but the firing solution was vague. The fish would have to do something of the tracking by itself. The Pogi's 2 torpedoes were almost perfectly dialed in. The problem was that neither boat had authority to shoot. Both attack submarines were operating under the normal rules of engagement. They could fire in self-defense only, and defend the Red October only by bluff and guile. The question was whether the Alpha knew what the Red October was. The VK Konovalov.
"Steer for the Ohio," Tupolev ordered. "Bring speed to 3 knots.
We must be patient, comrades. Now that the Americans know where we are, they will not ping us again. We will move from our place quietly."
The Konovalov's bronze propeller turned more quickly. By shutting down some non-essential electrical systems, the engineers were able to increase speed without increasing reactor output. The Pogi. On the Pogi, the nearest attack boat, the contact faded, degrading the directional bearing somewhat. Commander Wood debated whether or not to get another bearing with active sonar, but decided against it. If he used active sonar,
his position would be like that of a policeman looking for a burglar in a dark building with a flashlight. Sonar pings could well tell his target more than they told him. Using passive sonar was the normal routine in such a case. Chief Palmer reported the passage of the Dallas down their port side. Both Wood and Chambers decided not to use their underwater telephones to communicate. They could not afford to make any noise now. The Red October. They had been creeping along for half an hour now. Ryan was chain-smoking at his station, and his palms were sweating as he struggled to maintain his composure. This was not the sort of combat he had been trained for, being trapped inside a steel pipe, unable to see or hear anything. He knew that there was a Soviet submarine out there, and he knew what her orders were. If her captain realized who they were, then what? The two captains, he thought, were amazingly cool.
"Can your submarines protect us?" Ramius asked. "Shoot at a Russian sub?"
Mancuso shook his head.
"Only if he shoots first. At them. Under the normal rules, we don't count."
"What?" Ryan was stunned.
"You want to start a war?"
Mancuso smiled, as though he found this situation amusing. "That's what happens when warships from two countries start exchanging shots. We have to smart our way out of this."
"Be calm, Ryan," Ramius said. "This is our usual game. The Hunter submarine tries to find us, and we try not to be found. Tell me, Captain Mancuso, at what range did you hear us off Iceland?"
"I haven't examined your chart closely, Captain," Mancuso mused. "Maybe 20 miles, 30 or so kilometers.
"And then we were traveling at 13 knots. Noise increases faster than speed. I think we can move east, slowly, without being detected. We use the Caterpillar, move at 6 knots. As you know, Soviet sonar is not so efficient as American. Do you agree, Captain?"
Mancuso nodded.
"She's your boat, sir. May I suggest northeast? That ought to put us behind our attack boats, inside an hour, maybe less."
"Yes." Ramius hobbled over to the control board to open the tunnel hatches, then went back to the phone. He gave the necessary orders. In a minute, the Caterpillar motors were engaged, and the speed was increasing slowly.
"Rudder right 10, Ryan," Ramius said, "and ease the plane controls."
"Rudder right 10, sir. Easing the planes, sir."
Ryan carried the orders out, glad that they were doing something.
"Your course is 040, Ryan,"
Mancuso said from the chart table.
040, coming right through 350. From the helmsman's seat, he could hear the water swishing down the port side tunnel. Every minute or so, there was an odd rumble that lasted 3 or 4 seconds. The speed gauge in front of him passed through 4 knots.
"You are frightened, Ryan," Ramius chuckled.
Jack swore to himself. His voice had wavered.
"I'm a little tired, too." "I know it is difficult for you. You do well for a new man with no training. We will be late to Norfolk, but we shall get there. You will see. Have you been on a missile boat, Mancuso?"
"Oh, sure. Relax, Ryan. This is what boomers do. Somebody comes looking for us, we just disappear." The American commander looked up from the chart. He considered marking it up more, but decided not to. There were some very interesting notations on this coastal chart, like programmed missile firing positions. Fleet intelligence would go ape over this sort of information. The Red October was moving northeast at 6 knots now. The Konovalov was coming southeast at 3. The Pogi was heading south at 2, and the Dallas south at 15. All 4 submarines were now within a 6-mile diameter circle, all converging on about the same point.
The VK Konovalov. Tupolev was enjoying himself. For whatever reason, the Americans had chosen to play a conservative game that he had not expected. The smart thing, he thought, would have been for one of the attack boats to close in and harass him, allowing the missile sub to pass clear with the other escort. Well, at sea, nothing was ever quite the same twice. He sipped at a cup of tea as he selected a sandwich. His sonar Mishman noted an odd sound in his sonar set. It only lasted a few seconds, then was gone.
Some far-off seismic rumble, he thought at first. The Red October. They had risen because of the Red October's positive trim, and now Ryan had 5 degrees of down angle on the diving planes to get back down to 100 meters. He heard the captains discussing the absence of a thermocline. Mancuso explained that it was not unusual for the area, particularly after violent storms. They agreed that it was unfortunate. A thermal layer would have helped their evasion. Jones was at the aft entrance of the control room, rubbing his ears. The Russian phones were not very comfortable.
Skipper, I'm getting something to the north. Comes and goes. I haven't got a bearing lock on it.
Whose? Mancuso asked.
Can't say, sir. The active sonar isn't too bad, but the passive stuff just isn't up to the drill, Skipper. We're not blind, but close to it.
Okay. If you hear something, sing out.
Aye, aye, Captain. You got some coffee out here? Mr. Bugayev sent me for some.
I'll have a pot sent in.
Right.
Jones went back to work.
The VK Konovalov.
Comrade Captain, I have a contact, but I do not know what it is, the Mishman said over the phone.
Tupolev came back, munching on his sandwich. Ohio's had been acquired so rarely by the Russians, 3 times to be exact, and in each case the quarry had been lost within minutes, that no one had a feel for the characteristics of the class. The Mishman handed the captain a spare set of phones.
It may take a few minutes, comrade. It comes and goes.
The water off the American coast, though nearly isothermal, was not entirely perfect for sonar systems. Minor currents and eddies set up moving walls that reflected and channeled sound energy on a nearly random basis. Tupolev sat down and listened patiently. It took 5 minutes for the signal to come back. The Mishman's hand waved.
Now, comrade captain.
His commanding officer looked pale.
Bearing?
Too faint and too short to lock in, but 3 degrees on either bow, 136 to 142.
Tupolev tossed the headphones on the table and went forward. He grabbed the political officer by the arm and led him quickly to the wardroom.
It's Red October.
Impossible! Fleet Command said that his destruction was confirmed by visual inspection of the wreckage.
The Zampolit shook his head emphatically.
We have been tricked. The Caterpillar acoustical signature is unique, comrade. The Americans have him, and he is out there. We must destroy him.
No, we must contact Moscow and ask for instructions.
The Zampolit was a good communist, but he was a surface ship officer who didn't belong on submarines, Tupolev thought.
Comrade Zampolit, it will take several minutes to approach the surface, perhaps 10 or 15 to get a message to Moscow, 30 more for Moscow to respond at all, and then they will request confirmation. 1 hour in all. 2, 3. By that time, Red October will be gone. Our original orders are operative, and there is no time to contact Moscow.
But what if you are wrong?
I am not wrong, comrade, the captain hissed. I will enter my contact report in the log and my recommendations. If you forbid this, I will log that also. I am right, comrade. It will be your head, not mine. Decide.
You are certain?
Certain.
Very well.
The Zampolit seemed to deflate.
How will you do this?
As quickly as possible, before the Americans have a chance to destroy us. Go to your station, comrade.
The 2 men went back to the control room. The Konovalov's 6-bow torpedo tubes were loaded with Mark C 533mm wire-guided torpedoes. All they needed was to be told where to go.
Sonar, search forward on all active systems, the captain ordered.
The Mishman pushed the button. The Red October.
Ouch!
Jones' head jerked around.
Skipper, we're being pinged. Port side, midships, maybe a little forward. Not one of ours, sir.
The Pogie.
Con sonar, the Alpha's got the boomer. The Alpha bearing is 192.
All ahead, 2/3.
Wood ordered immediately.
All ahead, 2/3, aye.
The Pogie's engines exploded into life, and soon her propeller was thrashing the black water. The VK Konovalov.
Range, 7,600 meters. Elevation angle, zero, the Mishman reported.
So, this was the submarine they had been sent to hunt, he thought. He had just donned a headset that allowed him to report directly to the captain and fire control officer. The Starpom was the chief fire control supervisor. He quickly entered the data into the computer. It was a simple problem of target geometry.
We have a solution for torpedoes 1 and 2.
Prepare to fire.
Flooding tubes.
The Starpom flipped the switches himself, reaching past the petty officer.
Outer torpedo tube doors are open.
Recheck firing solution, Tupolev said.
The Pogi. The Pogi's sonar chief was the only man to hear the transient noise.
Con sonar alpha contact, she just flooded tube, sir. Target bearing is 179.
The VK Konovalov.
Solution confirmed, comrade captain, the Starpom said.
Fire 1 and 2, Tupolev ordered.
Firing 1.
Firing 2.
The Konovalov shuddered twice as compressed air charges ejected the electrically powered torpedoes. The Red October. Jones heard it first.
High-speed screws port side, he said loudly and clearly. Torpedoes in the water port side.
Real Nalyeva,
Ramius ordered automatically.
What?
Ryan asked.
Left, rudder left.
Ramius pounded his fist on the rail.
Left full, do it, Mancuso said.
Left full, rudder, aye.
Ryan turned the wheel all the way and held it down. Ramius was spinning the annunciator to flank speed. The Pogi.
Two fish running, Palmer said. Bearing is changing right to left. I say again, torpedo bearing changing right to left, rapidly on both fish. They're targeted on the boomer.
The Dallas. The Dallas heard them too. Chambers ordered flank speed and a turn to port. With torpedoes running, his options were limited, and he was doing what American practice taught, heading someplace else, very fast. The Red October.
I need a course, Ryan said.
Jonesy, give me a bearing, Mancuso shouted.
320, sir. Two fish heading in,
Jones responded at once, working his controls to nail the bearing down. This was no time to screw up.
Steer 320, Ryan, Ramius ordered. If we can turn so fast.
Thanks a lot, Ryan thought angrily, watching the gyro compass click through 357. The rudder was hard over, and with the sudden increase in power from the Caterpillar's motors, he could feel feedback flutter through the wheel.
Two fish heading in. Bearing is 320. I say again, bearing is constant,
Jones reported, much cooler than he felt.
Here we go, guys.
The Pogi. Her tactical plot showed the October, the Alpha, and the two torpedoes. The Pogi was 4 miles north of the action.
Can we shoot?
The exec asked.
At the Alpha?
Wood shook his head emphatically. No, damn it. It wouldn't make a difference anyway. The VK Konovalov. The two Mark C torpedoes were charging at 41 knots, a slow speed for this range, so that they could be more easily guided by the Konovalov's sonar systems. They had a projected 6-minute run, with 1 minute already completed. The Red October.
Okay, coming through 345, easing the rudder off, Ryan said.
Mancuso kept quiet now. Ramius was using a tactic that he didn't particularly agree with, turning into the fish. It offered a minimum target profile, but it gave them a simpler geometric intercept solution. Presumably, Ramius knew what Russian fish could do. Mancuso hoped so.
Steady on 320, Captain, Ryan said,
eyes locked on the gyro repeater as though it mattered. A small voice in his brain congratulated him for going to the head an hour earlier.
Ryan, down, maximum down on the diving planes.
All the way down.
Ryan pushed the yoke to the stops. He was terrified, but even more frightened of fouling up. He had to assume that both commanders knew what they were about. There was no choice for him. Well, he thought, he did know one thing. Guided torpedoes can be tricked. Like radar signals that are aimed at the ground, sonar pulses can be obscured, especially when the sub they are trying to locate is near the bottom or the surface, areas where the pulses tend to be reflected. If the October dived, she could lose herself in an opaque field, presuming she got there fast enough. The VK Konovalov.
Target aspect has changed, Comrade Captain. Target is now smaller, the Mishman said.
Tupolev considered this. He knew everything there was on Soviet combat doctrine, and knew that Ramius had written a good deal of it. Marco would do what he taught all of us to do, Tupolev thought. Turn into the oncoming weapon to minimize target cross-section and dive for the bottom to become lost in the confused echoes.
Target will be attempting to dive into the bottom capture field. Be alert.
Aye, comrade. Can he reach the bottom quickly enough?
The Starpom asked. Tupolev racked his brain for the October's handling characteristics.
No. He cannot dive that deep in so short a time. We have him.
Sorry, my old friend, but I have no choice, he thought. The Red October. Ryan cringed each time the sonar lash echoed through the double hull.
Can't you jam that or something? He demanded.
Patience, Ryan, Ramius said.
He had never faced live warheads before, but had exercised this problem 100 times in his career.
Let him know he has us first.
Do you carry decoys? Mancuso asked.
4 of them, in the torpedo room, forward.
But we have no torpedo men.
Both captains were playing the cool game, Ryan noted bitterly from inside his terrified little world. Neither was willing to show fright before his peer, but they were both trained for this.
Skipper, Jones called. 2 fish, bearing constant at 320. They just went active. I say again, the fish are now active. Shit, they sound just like 48s. Skipper, they sound like Mark 48's fish.
Ramius had been waiting for this.
Yes. We stole the torpedo sonar from you 5 years ago, but not your torpedo engines.
Bugayev!
In the sonar room, Bugayev had powered up the acoustical jamming gear as soon as the fish were launched. Now, he carefully timed his jamming pulses to coincide with those from the approaching torpedoes. The pulses were dialed into the same carrier frequency and pulse repetition rate. The timing had to be precise. By sending out slightly distorted return echoes, he could create ghost targets. Not too many, nor too far away, just a few close by, and he might be able to confuse the fire control operators on the attacking Alpha. He thumbed the trigger switch carefully, chewing on an American cigarette. The VK Konovalov.
Damn, he's jamming us!
The Mishman, noting a pair of new pips, showed his first trace of emotion. The fading pip from the true contact was now bordered with 2 new ones, one north and closer, the other south and farther away.
Captain, the target is using Soviet jamming equipment.
You see, Tupolev said to the Zampalit. Use caution now, he ordered his Starpom.
The Red October.
Ryan, all up on planes, Ramius shouted.
All the way up. Ryan yanked back, pulling the yoke hard against his belly, and hoping that Ramius knew what the hell he was doing.
Jones, give us time and range.
Aye.
The jamming gave them a sonar picture plotted on the main scopes.
2 fish, bearing 320, range to number 1 is 2,000 yards, to number 2 is 2,300. I got a depression angle on number 1. Number 1 fish is heading down a little, sir.
Maybe Bugayev wasn't so dumb after all, Jones thought. But they had 2 fish to sweat. The Pogi. The Pogi's skipper was enraged. The goddamn rules of engagement prevented him from doing a goddamn thing. Except, maybe.
Sonar ping! Ping the son of a bitch! Max power! Blast the sucker!
The Pogi's BQQ-5 sent timed wave fronts of energy lashing at the Alpha. The Pogi couldn't shoot. But maybe the Russian didn't know that, and maybe this lashing would interfere with their targeting sonar. The Red October.
Any time now. One of the fish has capture, sir. I don't know which.
Jones moved the phones off one ear, his hand poised to slap the other off. The homing sonar on one torpedo was now tracking them. Bad news. If these were like Mark 48s, Jones knew all too well that those things didn't miss much. He heard the change in the Doppler shift of the propellers as they passed beneath the Red October. One missed, sir. Number one missed under us. Number two is heading in. Ping, interval is shortening. He reached over and patted Bugayev on the shoulder. Maybe he really was the onboard genius that the Russians said he was. The VK Konovalov. The second Mark C torpedo was cutting through the water at 41 knots. This made the torpedo target closing speed about 55. The guidance and decision loop was a complex one. Unable to mimic the computer homing system on the American Mark 48, the Soviets had the torpedo's targeting sonar report back to the launching vessel through an insulated wire. The Starpom had a choice of sonar data with which to guide the torpedoes, that from the sub-mounted sonar, or that from the torpedoes themselves. The first fish had been duped by the ghost images that the jamming had duplicated on the torpedo sonar frequency. For the second, the Starpom was using the lower frequency bow sonar. The first one had missed low, he knew now. That meant that the target was the middle pip. A quick frequency change by the Mishman cleared the sonar picture for a few seconds before the jamming mode was altered. Coolly and expertly, the Starpom commanded the second torpedo to select the center target. It ran straight and true. The 500-pound warhead struck the target, a glancing blow aft of midship, just forward of the control room. It exploded a millisecond later. The Red October. The force of the explosion hurled Ryan from his chair, and his head hit the deck. He came to from a moment's unconsciousness, with his ears ringing in the dark. The shock of the explosion had shorted out a dozen electrical switchboards, and it was several seconds before the red battle lights clicked on. Aft, Jones had flipped his headphones off just in time, but Bugayev, trying to the last second to spoof the incoming torpedo, had not. He was rolling in agony on the deck, one eardrum ruptured, totally deafened. In the engine spaces, men were scrambling back to their feet. Here, the lights had stayed on, and Melikin's first action was to look at the damage control status board. The explosion had occurred on the outer hull, a skin of light steel. Inside it was a water-filled ballast tank, a beehive of cellular baffles 7 feet across. Located beyond the tank were high-pressure air flasks. Then came the October's battery bank and the inner pressure hull. The torpedo had impacted in the center of a steel plate on the outer hull, several feet from any weld joints. The force of the explosion had torn a hole 12 feet across, shredded the interior ballast tank baffles, and ruptured a half-dozen air flasks. But already much of its force had been dissipated. The final damage was done to 30 of the large nickel-cadmium battery cells. Soviet engineers had placed these here deliberately. They had known that such a placement would make them difficult to service, difficult to recharge, and worst of all, expose them to seawater contamination. All this had been accepted in light of their secondary purpose as additional armor for the hull. The October's batteries saved her. Had it not been for them, the force of the explosion would have been spent on the pressure hull. Instead, it was greatly reduced by the layered defensive system, which had no Western counterpart. A crack had developed at a weld joint on the inner hull, and water was spraying into the radio room, as though from a high-pressure hose, but the hull was otherwise secure. In control, Ryan was soon back in his seat, trying to determine if his instrument still worked. He could hear water splashing into the next compartment forward. He didn't know what to do. He did know it would be a bad time to panic, much as his brain screamed for the release. "What do I do? Still with us?" Mancuso's face looked satanic in the red lights. "No, goddammit, I'm dead. What do I do?" "Ramius." Mancuso saw the captain holding a flashlight taken from a bracket on the aft bulkhead. "Down. Dive for the bottom." Ramius took the phone and called engineering to order the engine stopped. Melikin had already given the order. Ryan pushed his controls forward. "In a goddamn submarine that's got a goddamn hole punched in it, they tell you to go down," he thought. The VK Konovalov.
"A solid hit, comrade captain," the Mishman reported. "His engine stopped. I hear hull creaking noises. His depth is changing."
He tried some additional pings, but got nothing. The explosion had greatly disturbed the water. There were rumbling echoes of the initial explosion reverberating through the sea. Trillions of bubbles had formed, creating an ensonified zone around the target that rapidly obscured it. His active pings were reflected back by the cloud of bubbles, and his passive listing ability was greatly reduced by the recurring rumbles. All he knew for sure was that one torpedo had hit, probably the second. He was an experienced man trying to decide what was noise and what was signal, and he had reconstructed most of the events correctly. The Dallas.
"Score one for the bad guys," the sonar chief said.
The Dallas was running too fast to make proper use of her sonar, but the explosion was impossible to miss. The whole crew heard it through the hull. In the attack center, Chambers plotted their position 2 miles from where the October had been. The others in the compartment looked at their instruments without emotion. 10 of their shipmates had just been hit, and the enemy was on the other side of the wall of noise.
"Slow to 1/3, Chambers ordered.
"All ahead, 1/3, the officer of the deck repeated.
"Sonar, get me some data," Chambers said.
"Working on it, sir," Chief Laval strained to make sense of what he heard.
It took a few minutes as the Dallas slowed to under 10 knots.
"Con sonar, the boomer took one hit. I don't hear her engines. But there ain't no breakup noises. I say again, sir, no breakup noises."
"Can you hear the Alpha?"
"No, sir. Too much crud in the water."
Chambers' face screwed into a grimace. "You're an officer," he told himself. "They pay you to think. First, what's happening? Second, what do you think about it? Think it through. Then act."
"Estimated distance to target?"
"Something like 9,000 yards, sir,"
Lieutenant Goodman said, reading the last solution off the fire control computer.
"Should be on the far side of the unsonified zone."
"Make your depth 600 feet," the diving officer passed this on to the helmsman. Chambers considered the situation and decided on his course of action. He wished Mancuso and Mannion were here. The captain and navigator were the other two members of what passed for the Dallas's Tactical Management Committee. He needed to exchange some ideas with other experienced officers, but there weren't any.
"Listen up, we're going down. The disturbance from the explosion will stay fairly steady. If it moves at all, it'll go up.
Okay, we'll go under it. First, we want to locate the boomer. If she isn't there, then she's on the bottom. It's only 900 feet here, so she could be on the bottom with a live crew. Whether or not she's on the bottom, we gotta get between her and the Alpha.
And, he thought on, if the Alpha shoots then, I'll kill the fucker, and the rules of engagement be damned." They had to trick this guy. But how? And where was the Red October? The Red October. She was diving more quickly than expected. The explosion had also ruptured a trim tank, causing more negative buoyancy than they had at first allowed for. The leak in the radio room was bad, but Melikin had noted the flooding on his damage control board and reacted immediately. Each compartment had its own electrically powered pump. The radio room pump, supplemented by a master zone pump that he had also activated, was managing, barely, to keep up with the flooding. The radios were already destroyed, but no one was planning to send any messages.
"Ryan, all the way up, come right full rudder," Ramius said.
"Right full rudder, all the way up on the plains," Ryan said.
"We going to hit the bottom?"
"Try not to," Mancuso said. "It might spring the leak worse."
"Great," Ryan growled back.
The October slowed her descent, arcing east below the unsonified zone. Ramius wanted it between himself and the Alpha. Mancuso thought that they might just survive after all. In that case, he'd have to give this boat's plans a closer look. The Dallas.
"Sonar, give me 2 low-powered pings for the boomer. I don't want anybody else to hear this, Chief."
"Aye."
Chief Laval made the proper adjustments and sent the signals out.
"All right, Con Sonar, I got her. Bearing 203, range 2,000 yards. She is not, repeat, not on the bottom, sir."
"Left 15 degrees rudder. Come to 203, Chambers ordered.
"Left 15 degrees rudder, aye," the helmsman sang out. "New course, 230. Sir, my rudder is left 15 degrees.
"Frenchie, tell me about the boomer."
Sir, I got pump noises, I think, and she's moving a little. Bearing is now 201. I can track her on passive, sir.
Thompson, plot the boomer's course. Mr. Goodman, we still have that Moss ready for launch?
Aye, aye, responded the torpedo officer.
The VK Konovalov.
Did we kill him?
The Zampalit asked.
Probably, Tupolev answered, wondering if he had or not.
We must close to be certain. Ahead slow.
Ahead slow!
The Pogi. The Pogi was now within 2,000 yards of the Konovalov, still pinging her mercilessly.
He's moving, sir, enough that I can read passive, Sonar Chief Palmer said.
Very well. Secure pinging, Wood said.
Aye, pinging secured.
We got a solution?
Locked in tight, Reynolds answered. Running time is 1:18. Both fish are ready.
All ahead, 1/3.
All ahead, 1/3 aye.
The Pogi slowed. Her commanding officer wondered what excuse he might find for shooting. The Red October.
Skipper, that was one of our sonars that pinged us. Off north-northeast. Low-power ping, sir. Must be close.
Think you can raise her on Gertrude?
Yes, sir.
Captain, Mancuso asked, permission to communicate with my ship.
Yes.
Jones, raise her right now.
Aye, this is Jonesy calling Frenchy. Do you copy?
The sonar man frowned at the speaker.
Frenchy, answer me.
The Dallas.
Con sonar, I got Jonesy on the Gertrude.
Chambers lifted the control room Gertrude phone.
Jones, this is Chambers. What is your condition?
Mancuso took the mic away from his man.
Wally, this is Bart, he said. We took one midships, but she's holding together. Can you run interference for us?
Aye, aye. Starting right now. Out. Chambers replaced the phone.
Goodman, flood the Moss tube, okay? We'll go in behind the Moss. If the Alpha shoots at it, we take her out. Set it to run straight for 2,000 yards, then turn south.
Done. Outer door open, sir.
Launch.
Moss away, sir.
The decoy ran forward at 20 knots for 2 minutes to clear the Dallas, then slowed. It had a torpedo body whose forward portion carried a powerful sonar transducer that ran off a tape recorder and broadcast the recorded sounds of a 688-class submarine. Every 4 minutes, it changed over from a loud operation to silent. The Dallas trailed 1,000 yards behind the decoy, dropping several hundred feet below its course track. The Konovalov approached the wall of bubbles carefully, with the Pogi trailing to the north.
"Shoot at the decoy, you son of a bitch," Chambers said quietly.
The attack center crew heard him and nodded grim agreement. The Red October. Ramius judged that the unsonified zone was now between him and the Alpha. He ordered the engines turned back on, and the Red October proceeded on a northeasterly course. The VK Konovalov.
Left 10 degrees rudder, Tupolev ordered quietly. We'll come around the dead zone to the north and see if he is still alive when we turn back. First, we must clear the noise.
Still nothing, the Mishman reported. No bottom impact. No collapse noises.
New contact. Bearing 170. Different sound. Comrade Captain, one propeller.
Sounds like an American.
What heading?
South, I think. Yes, south. The sound's changing. It is American.
An American sub is decoying. We ignore it.
Ignore it? The Zampalit said.
Comrade, if you are heading north and were torpedoed, would you then head south?
Yes, you would, but not Marco. It is too obvious. This American is decoying to try to take us away from him.
Not too clever, this one. Marco would do better. And he would go north. I know him. I know how he thinks. He is now heading north, perhaps northeast. They would not decoy if he was dead. Now we know that he is alive, but crippled. We will find him and finish him.
Tupolev said calmly, fully caught up in the hunt for Red October, remembering all he had been taught. He would prove now that he was the new master. His conscience was still. Tupolev was fulfilling his destiny.
But the Americans!
"We'll not shoot, comrade," the captain said with a thin smile. "If they could shoot, we would already be dead from the one to the north. They cannot shoot without permission. They must ask for permission, as we must. But we already have the permission, and the advantage. We are now where the torpedo struck him, and when we clear the disturbance, we will find him again. Then we will have him."
The Red October. They couldn't use the Caterpillar. One side was smashed by the torpedo hit. The October was moving at 6 knots, driven by her propellers, which made more noise than the other system. This was much like the normal drill of protecting a boomer, but the exercise always presupposed that the escorting attack boats could shoot to make the bad guy go away.
"Left rudder, reverse course," Ramius ordered.
"What?"
Mancuso was astounded.
"Think, Mancuso," Ramius said, looking to be sure that Ryan carried out the order.
Ryan did, not knowing why.
"Think, Commander Mancuso," Ramius repeated.
"What has happened?"
"Moskva ordered the Hunter sub to remain behind. Probably a Politovsky-class boat.
The Alpha, you call him."
"I know all their captains. All young. All, aggressive. Yes, aggressive. He must know we are not dead. If he knows this, he will pursue us. So, we go back like a fox and let him pass."
Mancuso didn't like this. Ryan could tell without looking.
"We cannot shoot. Your men cannot shoot. We cannot run from him. He is faster. We cannot hide. His sonar is better. He will move east, use his speed to contain us, and his sonar to locate us. By moving west, we have the best chance to escape. This he will not expect."
Mancuso still didn't like it, but he had to admit it was clever. Too damned clever. He looked back down at the chart. It wasn't his boat. The Dallas.
"The bastard went right past. Either ignored the decoy or flat didn't hear it. He's abeam of us. We'll be in his baffle soon," Chief Laval reported.
Chambers swore quietly. "So much for that idea. Right 15 degrees rudder." At least the Dallas had not been heard. The submarine responded rapidly to the controls.
"Let's get behind him."
The Pogie. The Pogie was now a mile off the Alpha's port quarter. She had the Dallas on sonar and noted her change of course. Commander Wood simply did not know what to do next. The easiest solution was to shoot, but he couldn't. He contemplated shooting on his own. His every instinct told him to do just this. The Alpha was hunting Americans, but he couldn't give in to his instinct. Duty came first. There was nothing worse than overconfidence, he reflected bitterly. The assumption behind this operation had been that there wouldn't be anybody around, and even if there were, the attack subs would be able to warn the boomer off well in advance. There was a lesson in this, but Wood didn't care to think about it just now. The VK Konovalov.
"Contact," the Mishman said into the microphone. "Ahead, almost dead ahead, using propellers and going at slow speed. Bearing 044, range unknown."
"Is it Red October?" Tupolev asked.
"I cannot say, Comrade Captain. It could be an American. He's coming this way, I think."
"Damn!"
Tupolev looked around the control room. Could they have passed the Red October? Might they already have killed him? The Dallas.
"Does he know we're here, Frenchie?" Chambers asked, back in sonar.
"No way, sir," Laval shook his head. "We're directly behind him. Wait a minute," the chief frowned.
"Another contact, far side of the Alpha. That's gotta be our friend, sir. Jesus, I think he's heading this way. Using his wheels, not that funny thing."
"Range to the Alpha."
"Under 3,000 yards, sir."
"All ahead 2/3. Come left 10 degrees, Chambers ordered. "Frenchie, ping, but use the under-ice sonar. He may not know what that is. Make him think we're the boomer."
"Aye, aye, sir."
The VK Konovalov.
"High-frequency pinging aft," the Mishman called out. "Does not sound like an American sonar, comrade."
Tupolev was suddenly puzzled. Was it an American to seaward? The other one on his port quarter was certainly American. It had to be the October. Marco was still the fox. He had lain still, letting them go past, so that he could shoot at them.
All ahead full, left full rudder.
The Red October.
Contact, Jones sang out. Dead ahead. Wait, it's an Alpha. She's close. Seems to be turning. Somebody pinging her on the other side. Christ, she's real close. Skipper, the Alpha is not a point source. I got signal separation between the engine and the screw.
Captain,
Mancuso said. The two commanders looked at one another and communicated a single thought as if by telepathy. Ramius nodded.
Get us range.
Jonesy, ping the sucker. Mancuso ran aft.
Aye.
The systems were full-powered. Jones loosed a single ranging ping.
Range 1,500 yards. Zero elevation angle, sir. We're level with her.
Mancuso, have your men give us range and bearing.
Ramius twisted the annunciator handle savagely.
Okay, Jonesy. You're our fire control. Track the mother.
The VK Konovalov.
One active sonar ping to starboard. Distance unknown. Bearing 040. The seaward target just ranged on us, the Mishman said.
Give me a range, Tupolev ordered.
Too far aft of the beam, comrade. I am losing him aft.
One of them was the October. But which? Could he risk shooting at an American sub?
No.
Solution to the forward target.
Not a good one, the Starpalm replied. He's maneuvering and increasing speed. The Mishman concentrated on the western target.
Captain, contact forward is not, repeat, not Soviet. Forward contact is American.
Which one? Tupolev screamed.
West and northwest are both American. East target unknown.
Keep the rudder at full.
Rudder is full,
the helmsman responded, holding the wheel over.
The target is behind us. We must lock on and shoot as we turn.
Damn, we are going too fast. Slow to one-third speed.
The Konovalov was normally quick to turn, but the power reduction made her propeller act like a brake, slowing the maneuver. Still, Tupolev was doing the right thing. He had to point his torpedo tubes near the bearing of the target, and he had to slow rapidly enough for his sonar to give him accurate firing information. The Red October.
Okay, the Alpha is continuing her turn, now heading right to left. Propulsion sounds are down some. She just chopped power, Jones said, watching the screen.
His mind was working furiously, computing course, speed, and distance. Range is now 1,200 yards.
She's still turning.
We're doing what I think?
Looks that way.
Jones set the active sonar on automatic pinging.
Have to see what this turn does, sir. If she's smart, she'll burn off south and get clear first.
Then pray he ain't smart, Mancuso said from the passageway. Steady as she goes.
Steady as she goes,
Ryan said, wondering if the next torpedo would kill them. Her turning is continuing. We're on her port beam now. Maybe her port bow. Jones looked up. She's going to get around first. Here come the pings. The Red October accelerated to 18 knots. The VK Konovalov.
I have him, the Mishman said. Range 1,000 meters, bearing 045, angle zero.
Set it up, Tupolev ordered his exec.
It will have to be a zero-angle shot. We're swinging too rapidly,
the Starpalm said. He set it up as quickly as he could. The submarines were now closing at over 40 knots.
Ready for tube 5 only. Tube flooded. Door open. Ready.
Shoot.
Fire 5.
The Starpalm's finger stabbed the button. The Red October.
Range down to 900. High-speed screws dead ahead. We have one torpedo in the water dead ahead. One fish. Heading right in.
Forget it. Track the Alpha.
Aye, okay. The Alpha's bearing 225, steadying down. We need to come left a little, sir.
Ryan, come left 5 degrees. Your course is 225.
Left 5 rudder, coming to 225.
The fish is closing rapidly, sir, Jones said.
Screw it. Track the Alpha.
Aye. Bearing is still 225, same as the fish.
The combined speed ate up the distance between the submarines rapidly. The torpedo was closing in on the October faster still, but it had a safety device built in. To prevent them from blowing up their own launch platform, torpedoes could not arm until they were 500 to 1,000 yards from the boat that launched them. If the October closed the Alpha fast enough, she could not be hurt. The October was now passing 20 knots.
Range to the Alpha is 750 yards, bearing 225. The torpedo is close, sir. A few more seconds.
Jones cringed, staring at the screen.
Clunk.
The torpedo struck the Red October dead center in her hemispherical bow. The safety lock still had another 100 meters to run. The impact broke it into three pieces, which were batted aside by the accelerating missile submarine.
A dud, Jones laughed. Thank you, God. Target still bearing 225. Range is 700 yards.
The VK Konovalov.
No explosion?
Tupolev wondered.
The safety locks, the Starpom swore.
He had to set it up too fast.
Where is the target?
Bearing 045, comrade.
Bearing is constant, the Mishman replied. Closing rapidly.
Tupolev blanched.
Left full rudder, all ahead flank.
The Red October.
Turning left to right, Jones said. Bearing is now 230. Spreading out a little. Need a little right rudder, sir.
Ryan, come right 5 degrees.
Rudder is right 5, Jack answered.
No, rudder 10 right,
Ramius countermanded his order. He had been keeping a track with pencil and paper, and he knew the Alpha.
Right 10 degrees, Ryan said.
Near field effect, range down to 400 yards, bearing is 225 to the center of the target. Target is spreading out left and right, mostly left, Jones said rapidly.
Range, 300 yards. Elevation angle is 0. We are level with the target. Range, 250, bearing 225 to target center. We can't miss, Skipper.
We're gonna hit, Mancuso called out.
Tupolev should have changed depth. As it was, he depended on the Alpha's acceleration and maneuverability, forgetting that Ramius knew exactly what these were.
Contact spread way the hell out. Instantaneous return, sir.
Brace for impact.
Ramius had forgotten the collision alarm. He yanked at it only seconds before impact. The Red October rammed the Konovalov just aft of midships at a 30-degree angle. The force of the collision ruptured the Konovalov's titanium pressure hull and crumpled the October's bow as if it were a beer can. Ryan had not braced hard enough. He was thrown forward, and his face struck the instrument panel. Aft, Williams was catapulted from his bed and caught by noise before his head hit the deck. Jones' sonar systems were wiped out. The missile submarine bounded up and over the top of the Alpha, her keel grating across the upper deck of the smaller vessel, as the momentum carried her forward and upward. The VK Konovalov. The Konovalov had full watertight integrity set. It did not make a difference. Two compartments were instantly vented to the sea, and the bulkhead between the control room and the after compartments failed a moment later from hull deformation. The last thing that Tupolev saw was a curtain of white foam coming from the starboard side. The Alpha rolled to port, turned by the friction of the October's keel. In a few seconds, the submarine was upside down. Throughout her length, men and gear tumbled about like dice. Half the crew were already drowning. Contact with the October ended at this point, when the Konovalov's flooded compartments made her drop stern first towards the bottom. The political officer's last conscious act was to yank at the disaster beacon handle, but it was to no avail. The sub was inverted, and the cable fouled on the sail. The only marker on the Konovalov's grave was a mass of bubbles. The Red October.
We still alive?
Ryan's face was bleeding profusely.
Up on the planes, Ramius shouted.
All the way up.
Ryan pulled back with his left hand, holding his right over the cuts.
Damage report, Ramya said in Russian.
Reactor system is intact, Melikin answered at once. The damage control board shows flooding in the torpedo room, I think. I have vented high-pressure air into it, and the pump is activated. Recommend we surface to assess damage.
Da!
Ramius hobbled to the air manifold and blew all tanks. The Dallas.
Jesus, the sonar chief said. Somebody hit somebody. I got breakup noises going down and hull-popping noises going up. Can't tell which is which, sir. Both engines are dead.
Get us up to periscope depth.
Quick!
Chambers ordered. The Red October. It was 1654 local time when the Red October broke the surface of the Atlantic Ocean for the first time, 47 miles southeast of Norfolk. There was no other ship in sight.
Sonar is wiped out, Skipper.
Jones was switching off his boxes.
Gone. Crunched.
We got some piddly-ass lateral hydrophones. No active stuff. Not even the Gertrude.
Go forward, Jonesy. Nice work.
Jones took the last cigarette from his pack.
Any time, sir. But I'm getting out next summer. Depend on it.
Bugayev followed him forward, still deafened and stunned from the torpedo hit. The October was sitting still on the surface, down by the bow, and listing 20 degrees to port from the vented ballast tanks. The Dallas.
How about that? Chambers said.
He lifted the microphone.
This is Commander Chambers. They killed the Alpha. Our guys are safe, surfacing the boat now. Stand by the fire and rescue party.
The Red October.
You okay, Commander Ryan?
Jones turned his head carefully.
Looks like you broke some glass the hard way, sir.
You don't worry till it stops bleeding, Ryan said drunkenly.
Guess so.
Jones held his handkerchief over the cuts. But I sure hope you don't always drive this bad, sir.
Captain Ramius, permission to lay to the bridge and communicate with my ship? Mancuso asked. Go. We may need help with the damage.
Mancuso got into his jacket, checking to make sure his small docking radio was still in the pocket where he had left it. 30 seconds later, he was atop the sail. The Dallas was surfacing as he made his first check of the horizon. The sky had never looked so good. He couldn't recognize the face 400 yards away, but it had to be Chambers.
Dallas, this is Mancuso.
Skipper, this is Chambers. You guys okay?
Yes, but we may need some hands. The bow's all stove in, and we took a torpedo midship.
I can see it, Bart. Look down.
Jesus!
The jagged hole was awash, half out of the water, and the submarine was heavily down by the bow. Mancuso wondered how she could float at all, but it wasn't the time to question why.
Come over here, Wally, and get the raft out.
On the way. Fire and rescue is standing by. There's our other friend, Chambers said.
The Pogey surfaced 300 yards directly ahead of the October.
Pogey says the area's clear. Nobody here but us.
Heard that one before, Chambers laughed mirthlessly.
How about we radio in?
No. Let's see if we can handle it first.
The Dallas approached the October. Within minutes, Mancuso's command submarine was 70 yards to port, and 10 men on a raft were struggling across the chop. Up to this time, only a handful of men aboard the Dallas had known what was going on. Now everyone knew. He could see his men pointing and talking. What a story they had. Damage was not as bad as they had feared. The torpedo room had not flooded. A sensor damaged by the impact had given a false reading. The forward ballast tanks were permanently vented to the sea, but the submarine was so big and her ballast tanks so subdivided that she was only 8 feet down at the bow. The list to port was only a nuisance. In 2 hours, the radio room leak had been plugged, and after a lengthy discussion among Ramius, Melikin, and Mancuso, it was decided that they could dive again if they kept their speed down and did not go below 30 meters. They'd be late getting to Norfolk. The 18th day. Monday, 20th December. The Red October.
Ryan again found himself atop the sail, thanks to Ramius, who said that he had earned it.